We're on a mission to explore how emerging technologies, media, robotics, and data and behavioral science will solve humanity's most pressing challenges. From education, mobility, energy, food and water supplies, the environment, employment, all the way to disease and basic human rights. Nothing is off limits. This episode is brought to you by Beverage Universe. They have every flavor to help you stay young, beautiful, and thirsty. Go to beverageuniverse.com for your next flavor experience. I'm excited to introduce today our guest, Tim McElrath. Tim is the Director of Technology for Emerging Platforms at Discovery, Inc. Welcome.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you for being here. So you've had an incredible career, starting from UBS, or actually going all the way back into art school. Mm-hmm. Tell us a bit about that.
Okay, I'll try to make it sound incredible. It's true, I actually have my degree from the Rhode Island School of Design back a long time ago. Actually, my degree is in photography, and this was in days before digital photography. So my, unfortunately, technology caught up to me and made my degree sort of antiquated within a few years. And within a few years, I started working in technology in New York. I'd always been programming. My father was a computer programmer since about 1963. He started in a machine works factory in central Massachusetts, making parts for textile mills. And this is when computers were took up an entire room and were run off of punch cards. Mm-hmm. So we always kind of had computer equipment around and did programming when I was growing up. So it really didn't intimidate me. After I graduated from college and moved to New York, my first technology job was working for the Albert Einstein College of Medicine in their graphics department. And they needed to put some of their departments on their intraweb, which was a brand new concept at the time in the mid to late 90s. And they literally could not find anybody to do it. And since I had a little bit of programming, I started doing that. And around that time, if you had that kind of experience, you know, that first internet boom was happening, you kind of got sucked into that world. So I started working for doing consulting for Computer Sciences Corporation and some publishers, things like that, in the late 90s, early 2000s. And that turned into jobs in financial services. I worked for Bank of America, Merrill Lynch, for about 8 years. And it took a while, and it took a major economic collapse for me to kind of take stock and realize that it wasn't really the kind of work I was interested in doing. Financial services is a fascinating field. It's just not the one I was fascinated with. So I took the jump and decided to leave that company and kind of start over again, kind of reset my career. So I took some contracting jobs, I worked for Federal Reserve Bank of New York for a while on a project, then got out of financial services completely, worked for a music publishing company, and then started working for digital ad agencies. First one was RGA, which is one of the great digital agencies of New York, working largely on their Nike projects. They're very heavily associated with Nike at the time. And so we started building out applications for Nike. We built their Nike skateboard app, which was a big milestone in my life because it was the first time in my career that something I did was considered cool by my kid. and I actually had to learn. We had to catalog about 350 different kind of skateboard tricks, learn all the terminology, do data modeling around how to classify skateboard tricks, take multi-dimensional videos of their skate pros and then put them into the app so that it could be used as a demonstration app. Having said that, I do not skateboard at all. I'm old enough that I would break a hip if I were to try. But that was fascinating, and it was really it was a great experience for me because it brought me really close to direct user experience. Even though I'm not a skateboarder, it was fascinating to learn how people actually did the things that they were passionate about. And even though it wasn't my passion, it's exciting to be around other people's passion to help facilitate building something that can assist them in following their passion. So worked with Nike for a while. It was a great experience. Also worked for another ad agency called Huge, which is based in Brooklyn, which is a great experience because it was very close to where I was living at the time. I could bike into work. Did some work for largely the client, did some work for Google, who was doing some ad work with them for a while, and that was a great experience. But I what I was looking for is trying to find another project where I could get closer to building out applications that kind of directly affected people's lives, you know, their daily lives and the things that really gave them meaning. So I got an opportunity to join Food Network, which at the time was part of a company called Scripps Networks Interactive, which was the parent company of Food Network and HGTV. So I was joined as being architect for foodnetwork.com for about a year. And then about a year in, our product lead came to me with an opportunity for a partnership with Amazon on this new platform that was just starting to catch on called Alexa. Amazon had released these, you know, tubes out into the public that had a microphone in it, and nobody thought that people would put a microphone in their homes connected directly to Jeff Bezos. But lo and behold, everybody bought one.
Right.
And our product lead, a woman named Liesl Kipp, who's, you know, in my mind, a genius, you know, she really saw that this had a lot of potential for reaching our customers, our fans, and a new mode of communication with them, a way for them to get information and to get closer to the things that they're passionate about, you know, the talent they're passionate about, you know, be it, you know, Ina Garten or Giada De Laurentiis or Guy Fieri, the things that gave them meaning around food. And you know, food is a great subject to build applications around because it touches so many areas in our lives. You know, it relates to our health, it relates to the way we care for our family, it relates to, you know, events in our lives or on holidays or celebrations. And it's something we pretty much have to do every day. So even, you know, beyond all of that, you have to figure out what you're going to eat every day, and you tend not to want to eat the same thing. So, you know, having something in your living room or your kitchen that you can ask questions to and it can talk back to you seems to have like a great deal of potential for figuring out how to deliver new types of content. So this was in early 2016. So we spent a couple of months trying to figure out what a first generation product would be for the Echo platform. Around the same time, Google announced that it was going to deliver its Google Home, which was essentially its Amazon Alexa competitor. And they wanted us to build something for that as well. Also, Facebook came to us and they had these new chatbot experiences that they were interested in having us build something around that as well. So going from a small project for Amazon Alexa, all of a sudden it looks like we're building, you know, a new type of service for our content around conversation. And we had to do some deep thinking on how do we build content systems that can deliver to all of these platforms consistently. You know, because you want the experience on Google Home to be similar to the experience on Amazon Alexa and not have to rebuild for each platform. So in that first year, we delivered the voice-only experience for Amazon Alexa and Google Home, delivered a chatbot for Facebook Messenger that did a recipe search and the ability for people who are watching TV to, you know, talk to their Alexa device and say, this thing that I'm watching on TV, I would like to make it later, so could you save it for me? You know, it was a great first use case because it connected our linear broadcast TV with our digital assets. And if you think about, you know, you have a desire to make something that Ina is making on Barefoot Contessa, you know, that journey to getting to actually look at the recipe on your kitchen counter and making it is, there's a lot of fits and starts, right? You have to go for a search. You may forget the recipe. You may forget about it completely. It may divert you to some other brand. You may not get what you want. Here, it's a sort of a direct connection via voice that you can just say out to your environment and say, you know, this thing I'm looking at, I'd like to make it later, and it's there where you expect it at the time you need it. So that's mm-hmm. really the kind of experiences we wanted to lean into for these platforms, something that kind of felt magical.
Mm-hmm. So some of your applications, I know they've won awards in the past, right?
We've been nominated for DigiDay Awards. We've been featured at the technology conferences for Google and Amazon Alexa. Mm-hmm. Last year at Amazon's reInvent conference, we were sort of the feature application at their Alexa Pavilion. You know, we've been featured in the keynotes of both Amazon and Google's I/O conference. So it's because we've been launch partners with both Amazon and Google over the years. So, you know, after we delivered their initial voice platforms, they both kind of turned around and offered different variations of multimodal. Now, multimodal just means you get both voice and visual coming back. So mm-hmm. Amazon's began its first generation of its Echo Show platform, which is a smart screen. Google initially launched Google Assistant on their Android phones. So you could talk to your phone and it would give you both vocal and visual feedback. And then they also branched out into smart screens, which is what's now the Nest Hub and some of their Lenovo devices.
Mm-hmm. So for people that may not be familiar, we have voice-only devices, we have multimodal devices, and we have the smart screens.
Right. And smart screens are really a version of multimodal. So, you know, voice-only devices are the ones that people are most familiar with. It's the Echo Tube, you know, the Echo device, the Echo Dot, which is the hockey puck. Sometimes we refer to them as the tube and the hockey puck. You know, those, you know, you talk to it and it will talk back to you, mm-hmm. which is great for some sorts of interactions. You know, quick informational interactions where you're saying something short and you're expecting a short answer back. You know, what's the weather today? What time is my flight? That kind of thing. But there's going to be some information where you may give a voice command and you need to get something more than just voice coming back. You need to get some visual input. You may need audio. You may need something else. You know, recipe search is a great example of that. You know, in general, you're not really going to do an audio-only recipe search because that visual aspect is very important. You know, people like to see the pictures of the food they're looking to make. Also, the amount of information is not really conducive to voice only. If you look at how you evaluate a recipe, you may scan down a list of ingredients. You may take a look at how many it serves, the difficulty level, and it's going to be different from recipe to recipe. That's maybe a little bit too much information for a voice only response. So the most efficient interaction is maybe searching by voice and getting a combination of voice and visual coming back at you. And that's what we really mean by multimodal.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's going to be, in these days, there's all sorts of, you know, multimodal type interactions. These assistants are, you know, they're on wearables, they're in your automobile. There are different variations of IoT devices around. So, you know, everything from your lights to your thermostat to your television to combinations of those. And then there are also companies like Samsung who are working on their own voice platform. Samsung's is called Bixby, where they're embedding voice assistants within their appliances and their electronic devices. So you can, you know, there are refrigerators that you can talk to. And there are ways you can talk to, you know, TV sets and microwaves and ovens and things like that.
Mm-hmm. So essentially, I mean, is it safe to say that pretty much anything in the future can be considered a multimodal device?
I think that's where we're going. So, you know, if you think of things, you know, right now that can provide you information, bathroom scales can be multimodal devices because that can plug in, you know, a bathroom scale can plug in to your fitness tracker that's on your Android or iOS phone or on your Fitbit. And that can be something that you can do, you know, haptic input, which is button pressing, or voice input. You know, a lot of it's really thinking about what the most appropriate interaction, given the user's situational context. Mm-hmm. If I'm at my kitchen counter and I'm cooking something, you know, I don't necessarily want to be touching things that's not food, because I either have to wash my hands or I have to touch and then wash my hands again.
Mm-hmm.
So voice interaction becomes, it makes a lot more sense. Whereas if you're, you know, if you're in a situation where you want privacy, then you may want to interact with the same application in a different way, because you don't want to use your voice, because it may not be appropriate for that situation. So one of the interesting design challenges is designing applications that can provide input and output that fits a number of different contextual situations.
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, you're getting the same experience, but you get to kind of decide what sort of devices you want to interact with and how you're going to interact with them.
So tell us a bit about the features of the Food Network application. Like how is it going to work? For example, like you mentioned earlier, you're watching a recipe on TV, you want to make it for later, you can save it in your Alexa memory, and then what happens?
Well, so we've built, we have a number of different digital products, both from mobile to web to now the voice and multimodal and our chatbots. You know, one of the things we really want to lean into is carrying that experience from one platform to another. So if I'm watching something on TV, I can use Alexa to save that recipe so that later on I can go to my mobile phone, look at my saves, and it's right there when I'm out shopping, and have that be as seamless as possible. So just mm-hmm. because I said something in my living room while I was watching TV, all of a sudden I'm in the grocery store and that recipe I wanted is right there.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where I feel the real value comes in. It's not building individual applications for a platform. It's you're building an experience that carries somebody through step A all the way to the end. And mm-hmm. again, food is a fascinating problem space. Because the journey starts, you know, in one place and ends up in a very different place. Like the point of inspiration of what you want to make or what you want to learn how to make, to gathering the ingredients, to actually doing the preparation and executing it. And the execution can go over a period of time as well. You can make, you know, like you can make a pie crust the night before and make the pie the next day. And so you have to, you know, figure out what those transition points between inspiration, you know, ingredient gathering, preparation, execution are. And then there may be other, you know, other steps beyond that in terms of, you know, you want to show it off, you want to report back, you want to give feedback to it, you want to make variations of that recipe so that you can save it for later because, you know, this becomes something that is not just a one-off, this may become a habit or tradition within your family.
Hold that thought. Let's take a quick break and thank our sponsors.
The production of the Amplified podcast has been brought to you by SocialFix Media. SocialFix is a transformational growth hacker agency focused on emerging technology platforms, video and podcast production, content marketing, and overall startup strategy. SocialFix has helped over 300 clients generate millions of dollars in revenue, fundraising, and profit. If you'd like help launching or growing your business, visit socialfix.com.
I'm assuming that the integration with, you know, Alexa per se will also allow the ingredients to be purchased and automatically delivered, some of the, cooking supplies or pans and pots or whatever equipment type you need can be automatically kind of
Show up. Anything you build for Amazon, they are going to be very interested in making it shoppable, because that's their business, right? So that's their whole infrastructure is based around getting somebody to a point of purchase and fulfilling that. So you know it's a great use case for Amazon specifically, because you know they have grocery stores, they have Whole Foods, and they have shopping lists built into their platform. So you can take your recipe and you know parse the ingredients, move it to a shopping list, and then have that, you know, delivered via Whole Foods. You can specify in your recipe the equipment and have those be dropped into a shopping list or, you know, hand off to an Amazon first-party shopping experience. to pick out a particular item that you'd like.
Do you see this type of product essentially just taking the TV out of the picture and just creating a multimodal TV?
Or? We're blurring the line, right? So right now we're delivering TV content over a lot of different channels. You know, Food Network and HGTV are kind of outliers in broadcast TV right now. And I say that because they're channels that people sit down and they will just watch for hours and hours. You know, people turn on Food Network and they just let it run. And they let it run through the commercials. Mm-hmm. And, advertisers love us for that. But it's a very unusual way of watching TV. It's definitely not the future of TV. You know, we're kind of the last holdouts of people who kind of watch programs through commercials and watch multiple episodes of the same program. But there's a reason for that. It's if you think about watching, something like Food Network or HGTV, there's something very comforting about it. The rhythm of seeing, this is my own opinion on why people love it. This calm process of taking a chaotic situation, organizing it into something beautiful, is, I think, just very comforting for people. Mm-hmm. Above and beyond the educational aspect of it, I think there's something therapeutic about watching somebody cook and watching somebody take a lot of care, either in cooking or making their home, because there's a lot of kind of baggage that comes along with making and maintaining your home space. That people just like to experience, even if they're not cooking along with it, but just observing it.
Mm-hmm.
So, Eric, one thing we'd like to do with these multimodal devices is allow that to happen in different sorts of spaces. For a smart screen on somebody's kitchen counter, where they may have Ina Garten making muffins, or Giada showing how to do pasta making. It reminds me very much of like when I was growing up. Back in prehistoric times, we used to have these black and white TVs that you used to get attached, underneath your kitchen counter, and had an antenna on it, and you just kind of watch things in the background while you were puttering around while I was washing dishes and cleaning up and preparing things, and there's something very relaxing about that. And also instructional. I mean, the cooking shows used to be on in the afternoon, and I remember watching Julia Child and the Galloping Gourmet, and people who try to cook along. Mm-hmm. We kind of want to replicate a little bit of that with the new applications we're building.
Mm-hmm. And it's educational content as well. So you're
right. So I feel like we should talk about the new product that we're building. So speaking of educational content. What we've been working on for the last year is a product we call Food Network Kitchen, which has just been launched. It's available on iOS and Android and Fire TV and Amazon Echo Show. And it's a subscription service for Food Network. But unlike other subscription services, it's not just taking the TV channel and making customers pay for it individually. Nobody at Discovery thinks people are just going to pay for individual TV channels. What we're trying to deliver is taking that TV content that people already love and expanding it out into something that's more of an education platform. So along with the TV shows, we have literally hundreds of on-demand cooking classes, and we do anywhere from 3 to 5, and in the future, potentially even more, live classes a day.
Mm-hmm.
So what we're turning this into is not just is a combination of entertainment and education. Our CEO David Zaslav likes to say that our aspiration is to turn this into the Peloton of food, and that's especially with the way we're approaching live classes. So we have a number of studios. We have a studio here in New York at Chelsea Market, in the Food Network Kitchens. We have one in LA, and we're also doing some remote shoots where we have our culinary experts as well as our on-air talent will do anywhere from 15 minutes to 45 minute cooking demonstrations live. Now, there are a couple of aspects that I really like about the live broadcast. One is the spontaneity. We have people who are really great presenters, really great talkers, people who can, I can't talk when I'm making food, but these people are fantastic at it. But somebody like Michael Simon is a great raconteur while he's cooking, talking about his family, talking about his 102-year-old father and the way he cooks, and just off-the-cuff stories about the types of food they're making and his own personal history. It's qualitatively different than watching the TV shows, which are entertaining in their own right, but are very tightly produced and edited. The other aspect that makes it really special is that we've built in audience interaction. So right now, if you're experiencing a cooking class on Iowa, on the mobile and connected TV platforms, you can actually ask questions while the class is going on. So Bobby Flay could be making a brunch on Sunday morning, and as he's doing it, you can type in a question. It could be about his personal preferences. It could be about food substitutions. And there's a moderator who will relay the questions to him, and he'll answer you back.
Right.
And they actually love doing that. It's a completely new way of broadcasting for the talent, and they're really starting to get into it, because it's not just about coming up with a script. It's more like having teaching a live cooking class with people there. So what we want to do is really lean into that. So right now we have the audience interaction. We're looking to bring that audience interaction as soon as we can to the voice first platforms. I think it would be an absolutely magical experience for you to be watching a cooking class on an Echo show and be able to just ask a question using voice, and then within a couple of minutes, Rachel Ray will answer your question directly back to you.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So there's that, and then there's the whole social aspect. If you think about Peloton as a model, one of the things that makes it very compelling is that you're not only interacting with the teacher, but you have an awareness that there are other people doing the same thing you're doing at the same time you're doing
it. An entire community, yes.
Right. So there's that one-on-one interaction with the culinary talent. Mm-hmm. But then there's this feeling of community that we're all doing it together, and adding in that social aspect where if you and some of your friends are taking these classes at the same time, you can kind of compare notes and compare results and things like that, and make it more like actually taking an in-person cooking class.
Right.
Which I've actually, as kind of research for this, there's the ICP down here in New York, which is where you can go and actually take classes, day-long classes. And it's a great experience. There's something about people getting together and learning something at the same time, which makes the experience a lot richer. And that's one of the big value adds we think that this product brings. And then you can watch those as previously live classes later. So if you missed the class, you don't miss it forever. And then if you want to move at your own pace, you have whole slew of on-demand classes around baking and Italian food and making eggs and cooking basics at different levels and different cuisine types to choose from.
Very cool. Yeah, I mean, the community aspect, I think, is just absolutely fascinating, because just like with fitness and just like with Peloton, and now a lot of other companies are doing it, they're integrating kind of a gaming approach to it. Mm-hmm. So you can even, show off your creations, and you can have an entire community kind of give their input on the ingredients, the substitutions, the technique, and so forth.
Right. And there's a lot of potential there for, adding kind of gamification to it. Not necessarily making a competitive game, but, as you progress and as you, learn, become more comfortable in the kitchen. And if, you can use a tool like this to feel more comfortable in the kitchen, that really, directly adds value to your life.
Mm-hmm.
It makes you feel more independent. It makes you feel like you're able to take care of yourself. You're more in control of your health. You're more in control of the way you're feeding your family. Allowing people to be able to track their progress, I think is brings a lot of value to their life, and also adds to their relationship with the product itself, because this is their way of tracking their progress in something that they're passionate about.
So in terms of voice first or multimodal? Which one do you think is going to, if you battle them out, which one's going to win in the future?
I think all of them. So it really depends on what how the user wants to interact with the content, right? So one thing I love about voice and multimodal, and especially the way we're building it out. So we're building out on mobile, we're building out on TV, we're building it out on smart screens, and we're going to extend out to voice only and other platforms as well, is that the idea is that we're not building out an app. We're building out an experience that crosses all the platforms and allows the user to choose the platform that they want to interact with us on based on the situation they're in. So they may be walking around and on their phone, you know, if they want to sit down in a coffee shop and watch a live class, they can do that. If they want to just sit back on the couch and watch it, they can do it, you know, they'll get the same content. Or if they want to be at the kitchen counter and cooking along with it, they can do it that way. If they're, you know, wandering around on their mobile phone and save a recipe for later, they can go home and then, you know, ask their Alexa device. And I'm trying not to say that word too often because
mm-hmm.
I mean,
yes.
If you're listening to a podcast like this, you want to put your Alexa devices on
yes.
mute.
that'll be a disclaimer.
Yeah. But, you know, select a recipe on your mobile device for later and just ask for saved recipes when you get to your Alexa device at home, and there it is. It's right there. So it's those transitions between platforms that I think are important to us. And then allowing people to actually, you know, how would you put it, craft your digital environment to the way that makes it more comfortable to you. Maybe people don't want to have, you know, a device with a microphone in their homes. If they feel uncomfortable with it, it doesn't block them from using our stuff. You know, they can use it on their phone, they can use it on their TV, or they can use it on their website.
Mm-hmm.
If they like using the multimodal devices and don't really use their phones for very much, they can get that, you can get the same experience that way. So I don't think, you know, from my point of view, it's not really about which platform wins, and I think that's kind of a dead end way of thinking about it. It's mm-hmm. what platform is most appropriate for a customer in the situation they're in.
As personalized as possible.
As personalized as possible and fits even the physical context.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're standing in your kitchen, you know, a voice multimodal makes more sense because you're not holding something in your hand and typing on it. So voice interaction makes more sense. And voice response makes more sense because you may be standing 5 or 6 feet away from the device and you're not able to read everything.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you're, you know, experiencing the application on your TV, then you're in a highly visual mode. So you're going to get less of a voice response because the assumption is if you're watching on TV, you're in lean back mode and you're getting all your information visually. If you're, you know, if you're talking on your headphones or if you're on a voice only device, we're going to assume that you're in a situation where, you know, you get very little visual information. We're going to give you more audio back.
What would be some trending data that you can share with us in terms of, you know, what you're working on now and where you see things even going in the next 5 years? Like, what type of new emerging technology do we have to look forward to?
I think what we're going to see is more of the trends we've seen in the last couple of years, which is moving away from single platforms. You know, video consumption is moving is expanding out from the TV. You know, I was just, you know, talking earlier about like a show like The Tonight Show. You know, I was mentioning that I don't recall if I've ever seen an episode of The Tonight Show, even though I've seen a bunch of video content from that show on YouTube or through Facebook or through Twitter and in bits and pieces. And that's the way I experienced that show, not necessarily on the TV experience. And I think a lot of content is starting to fragment out that way, that it's getting consumed in smaller chunks that can be assembled into larger chunks. You know, you can think of, you know binge watching things on Netflix. Mm. But the expectation is that content lives everywhere. And I think one of the big challenges is how do you organize it so that people can find it as right. easily as possible. You know, the idea of if I'm looking for a particular show or piece of short form content, where do I get it? You know, is it on, do I go to YouTube? Do I go to Hulu? Do I go to Netflix? Is it?
And what's the answer?
The answer is that we need services that kind of orchestrate people's experience, that can kind of guide them as kind of catalogs of where do I find these things. And that's where I think voice assistants can be really useful, right? So it's not necessarily delivering the content, but it knows where it can find it. So if you're going to, for example, we build in our catalog into the Alexa platform so that if you go to an Alexa device and say, I want to watch Brunch at Bobby's, it'll know that that title is associated with our catalog and how to get to our application. So that from the customer's experience, it's very seamless. You know, I'm a Food Network subscriber. I say, I want to watch Brunch at Bobby's. It takes me there without me having to know how to invoke the application and dig down and find the show. I think you're going to see, you know, the Google Assistant platforms, the Alexa platforms, playing that kind of role of concierge of, like, I know what things you subscribe to. I know what things are important to you. I know your habits, so I can direct you more quickly to the content you tend to ask for.
So they're essentially just becoming the next generation search engine.
It's a search engine, but it's also a kind of a directory service and also highly personalized.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea is that it's not just finding the most popular things across all content or all user searches. It's really knowing your particular habits and your particular preferences, and you know, you having control over tuning those preferences so that if I'm asking for music, it will go to Spotify as opposed to, you know, Amazon Music as opposed to Apple Music.
Right.
Or if I'm looking for video content that could exist on several different places, I decide where those query paths are going to go.
Yeah, I mean, I've spoken to quite a bit of people lately that are finding it very interesting how they'll do a search for the first time, let's say on their mobile device in the Google search engine, and it will automatically fill out and predict their strange search that they've only talked about,
right?
But never searched before. So I guess the lines are kind of blending and blurring and merging between voice, what it hears, what it sees you typing, your preferences, your settings, the information and knowledge that these devices have about our environments and so forth, and they're able to predict what we're looking for better than we are, apparently, half the time.
And the knowledge they have about us, which is intimidating.
Mm-hmm.
One of the first guiding principles we had when we started the Emerging Platforms team is don't be creepy.
Yeah, don't be creepy is a good one.
It's really easy to be creepy on this, you know, especially if you get personalized information now. You know, fortunately, we're working in a fairly innocuous space. You know, we may be tracking what recipes you like and what talent you like, but that's really so that we can give you more recipes. Having coded a lot of a portion of this, I can assure you we're not doing anything sinister.
I don't know. But some people have strange food tastes.
Well, but you don't. You want to make sure you're giving people appropriate information, but you want to be careful about making it seem like you're being creepy.
You know? Right.
You're kind of tracking them. So we want to be very upfront and transparent about what we save, you know, and how we deliver information back, because I know there's a line there. You know, in order for people to put a microphone in their home, you know, at least for the experiences that we control on it, we want to make people as comfortable with it as possible. You know, especially the fact that we're aiming this at not necessarily a technically savvy crowd. You know, one of the wonderful things about the voice assistant platforms, they've been adopted very widely by people who aren't, you know, techies.
Mm-hmm.
And because they're very easy to grasp, and they have, you know, very definite use cases for a wide variety of people.
Wide age ranges, wide capabilities, and
There's been a lot of work done to make voice assistants, you know, very useful for older people or people in assisted living or people who may have, you know, mobility problems.
Mm-hmm.
It's been work for people with dementia to make sure that they're that they're oriented and are reminded to take their medication, things like that. There's some, you know, kind of wonderful use cases for this, but there's also, you know, I think we, developing on these platforms, we have to be very highly conscious of the fact that there is a line that can be crossed. And there's an amount of trust that we've been given as developers on this platform that we want to treat very respectfully. So I can't speak for every developer on the platform, but I know from the point of view of Food Network, we want to be very respectful of people's space. We don't want to feel like we're invading their space. We want to feel like we're something that's there for them, there for the customer when they need us, but not necessarily, you know, invading their privacy or making their lives noisier. Mm-hmm. I think one of the nice things about voice platforms as opposed to mobile is the interactions on voice platforms tend to be shorter, right? Because on mobile, it's easy to go down the rabbit hole. If you're looking up something and then all of a sudden that leads you to somewhere else. And, voice interactions tend to be a lot shorter. You know, you have a piece of information you need, it'll give you an answer and then you're done and you can walk away. So, you know, oddly enough, you can build experiences that generate customer loyalty, but actually shorten their interaction with you. Because you're giving them the value they were looking for, and then leaving them alone to get on with their lives, which is kind of a aspect of the voice platforms I like a lot.
Well, on that note, how can people find you, and when can we take a look at the product and download it?
You can find us everywhere now. So we are nice. Food Network Kitchen is now on iOS and Android, and Fire TV and Amazon Echo Show. We have both free tier and subscription tier. So if you're a previous Food Network customer and used to our mobile app, all of that content that you were getting for free before is still there and it's still free. The subscription is really for the additional content that we're bringing, which is the live and on-demand cooking classes and also the complete episode catalog. So, you know, you can go to the App Store right now and download it and then link your accounts on your Alexa device and start taking cooking classes on your kitchen counter.
Awesome. Thank you, Tim, so much. I really appreciate your time, and I can't wait because I love cooking.
Okay. Well, and definitely if you're using the app and you go to the ratings and reviews, and if you leave a comment, I can assure you we are monitoring those comments every day, and we will respond to you, and we do take your suggestions seriously.
I love it. Thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you so much. It was great.
Thanks for listening to the Amplify Podcast. Follow us on our social channels and subscribe on Apple and Google Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, or wherever you get your podcasts. On the next episode, stay tuned for more trailblazing insights, energy, and culture to help fuel your pursuit in the modern digital era.